This is Voices of Poverty, a series of podcasts with people living in poverty in the greater Charlottesville area and with those working to help people living in poverty. Voices of Poverty is a project of Leadership Charlottesville, a program of the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce. I'm Becky Waybright with the 2006 Class of Leadership Charlottesville. Dr. Greg Gelbert lives his commitment to health care as a past volunteer at the Charlottesville Free Clinic and by frequently traveling to Honduras to administer care. He also accepts fees on a sliding scale at his downtown family health care right across from Friendship Court.
Even as a physician, it's somewhat easy to see a person in front of you, and if you don't go any deeper than addressing the medical issues, then you don't understand where the person came from that morning, where they're going back to, and how much money they may have in their wallet, and how much debt they may carry at home. And so if you give them a prescription for medication, that's when things start to open up, and they say, you know, I'm not sure I can afford this. Do you have anything cheaper? And that's when you dip into your sample closet and hope you have enough samples to give them.
I know you've done a lot of volunteer work, a lot of different places, to help people that don't have access to medical care. But maybe if you could tell me a little bit about what you've seen in particular here in the Charlottesville area and what particular issues we have related to poverty and low income.
Poverty ties in with understanding or education, or in this case, lack of education. And so what I may see, especially, let's say, in children, is poor dental care, a lack of understanding that juices and sodas are not to be given to children, and because of poor hygiene, they may not brush very well, and they certainly don't have the money to see a dentist. And so if they have access to your clinic, then they can at least start that process. But for a lot of folks who are just coming, they don't even know about the clinic yet, so they've had really no care for several years for their children. So that's one easy place to see the lack of education that would tell the mom, oh yeah, I can't give my child soda. And then there's the issue of malnutrition, which is perhaps not as severe as you might expect you'd see, like, say, in Honduras or Haiti, where it's severe. But because of food choices, it's not uncommon to have a child tell you, well, I had macaroni and cheese last night, I had pizza the night before, I had a school lunch, and that was good. I missed breakfast today. So they go to school without breakfast. They get somewhat of an institutional lunch at school, and then they come home and eat carbohydrates. So they're lacking protein, they're lacking vegetables, they're lacking most of their vitamins and minerals, they're lacking fruits. So in that regard, they may have food stamps, which you would think would be enough, but they don't have the understanding to know how to use those food stamps. So their parents make fairly unwise choices in what foods to bring home. The rest of it comes in for adults in either not showing up at all or showing up when things have advanced and things are too late. And then, you know, when I do physical exams, I used to not include the social aspects of that person's life. And in recent years, I've started asking people about financial stressors, which in med school I was taught you don't enter that field. But really, it's huge, because what we all have found is that financial stressors are sometimes the biggest part of the person's risks for bad health.
Dr. Gelbert works with many patients whose choices are constrained by their inability to pay, and he says many doctors don't think to ask about their patient's financial health.
I have one family. They live in a small trailer park here in town. The gentleman and his wife both work at a large department store here in town, making minimum wage. He has had already two heart attacks, low back surgery at UVA, where he could get part of it covered. It was discussed that he should have a bypass surgery for his heart, but their interpretation of what the physician said was that they probably couldn't afford it, so they didn't get that. He didn't get that. And he owes $700 a month to a used car sales place here in town, which is infamous, and I referred him to the Legal Aid Society, but they don't do bankruptcies, and that's what he needs now, is what his attorney has advised him, in order to get out of this payment for a car that hardly runs. $700 a month would probably buy you an upper-scale Mercedes, and he's driving like a 10-year-old car on that payment. So that's really sad. So if I hadn't known to ask the question, how are your financial stressors, then he would have walked out of here with maybe the medicines that he needed, but not the bigger issues in his life.
I know you've done something innovative here with your services in terms of offering sliding fee scale. Right. What kind of inspired you to want to do that, and how have you found that it's worked?
When I moved here, I was in a community health center for 4 years in North Carolina. So I had some understanding as to what a sliding fee scale was and what poverty was. And I just felt a calling from God to set up in this neighborhood. The sliding fee scale was pretty simple to set up. I just contacted Martha Jefferson, who has her own. And it's based on a fairly simple federal formula. The unusual thing for me was when we applied to banks for loans to start our business here, they wouldn't give us loans. I went to 4 community banks, and none of them would loan me any money. They said that the availability of sliding fee was like an open door, like a Trojan horse, and that because we didn't have a cap on it, they were afraid that we wouldn't be able to make our payments on the loan. So I wound up using 0% credit cards for the first 7 months of building this place out. Then finally, First Citizens, bless her heart, came forward and helped us set up a loan so we could get the money to set up our practice. So it actually is not as bad as I thought it was going to be as far as financial drain. It's about 7 to 10% of our total income is lost due to the sliding fee scale, which as physicians, they would know that that's money out of their pocket. Because as a business, we pay our overhead first, and then whatever is left goes into our pocket as our salary. Well, if you're taking out 10% or 7% even for the sliding fee scale patients, then you're losing that much money. And so all of us have been willing to do that, and it's been a joy. You know, I think God has this mathematical formula that's His, but it doesn't belong to us. So the more we give away, the more we do well, the better we do. So that's how it's been here. And for us as providers, it really lets us off the hook. It takes the pressure off of us. It means that we can see a person and not worry that they won't come back because they know they may have a $10 or $20 copay when they come back, but that's all they'll have to pay. They won't have to be going to have their credit messed up because they'll be late on their payments.
What's been your – now, you've been here a number of years in your location. What was your initial reception from the local community, the people across the street from you, so to speak?
Well, very surprising. I guess I was naive. It's a group of apartments, 124, I believe. It is not really a community, as you might imagine a neighborhood to be. Most people are somewhat on their own and independent. And when I talk to people, either on the street or in their apartment or in the office here, they'll tell me that they don't really know their neighbors. They have monthly meetings in the community center, but not many people go. In the beginning, we tried to hold meetings there often to get to know people. And the foundation that owns the neighborhood even offered prizes like DVD players and things like that. But people just don't come. I think one thing, they're overstressed as it is because they're working, and I'm generalizing here, but they're working full-time. They may have young children. They don't really have the time to take for something else, something in addition. When I talk to people on the street, it's getting better, but a lot of folks would say, oh, we saw your office go up, but we don't really know who you are. And we've sent flyers out, but it told me that they weren't reading the flyers either. So unless we go knocking door to door, which we don't really feel comfortable doing, the word gets out very slowly. So I would say of those 124 apartments, there might be 40 or so families that are coming here. The rest, I'm not sure what's happening, to be honest with you. We're still working on it. I'm still looking for ideas because so far what we've done so far is not enough in my mind.
What keeps you going with doing your work here, and then like next week you're going to New Orleans to do a free clinic and you go to Honduras? What inspires you to do that?
Well, for me personally, it's my relationship with God, with Christ. It's a joy. Sitting down with somebody who's just lost their house in New Orleans, someone who's lost their family perhaps, it's an honor and a privilege to sit in that room with those people and hear their stories. Like I was explaining to somebody the other day, it's like these people climb into your heart and they won't leave. And so why wouldn't I want to go back there more and more? And that's what I've done. This will be fourth trip, and I'm sure there'll be more. It's a joy. It really is. And I can't think of a better way to spend a day.
You've been listening to Dr. Greg Gelbert of Downtown Family Healthcare. This is Voices of Poverty, a project of Leadership Charlottesville and the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce. Music in this podcast comes from Mediva from the album Viva Mediva from MagnaTune.com.